ABBA and Does Your Mother Know? It's just gone 4:30 on TRE, and joining us on the line is Carl Magnus Palm, who's regarded as the world's leading ABBA historian. He's written or co-written 8 ABBA books, co-produced a number of television programs about the band, contributed to Stockholm's ABBA Museum, and worked as a consultant to Polar Music in the reissuing of ABBA's music. His new book, ABBA at 50, charts the journey of the Swedish quartet from humble beginnings in post-war Sweden to global superstardom. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you very much for joining us. So how does one become the world's leading ABBA historian? How did that happen?
Well, it just evolved organically, really. To cut a long story short, about 30 years ago, I decided that I wanted to write a book about ABBA's music, how it was written and recorded and so on. So I did that, and I interviewed all 4 ABBA members for that project, and I did a lot of research. And I never thought it would turn into a career, but that book was published, and it was quite popular with the ABBA fans and so on, and it just turned out that there was a need for someone like me who was interested in keeping track of the hows and whens and wherefores of the ABBA story. And, you know, I was there to do it.
Yes, brilliant. And I think most people will be able to name quite a few ABBA songs without even realizing how many they know and love. I just looked in my playlist now to try and decide which song I was going to play while introducing you, and I have so many ABBA songs in my playlist, it's ridiculous. So it was really difficult trying to pick one, and I'm sure a lot of people are the same.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that's why ABBA's music is still around today. If they'd only had, like, say, 1 or 2 or 3 hits back then, maybe we wouldn't remember them in the same way. But since there were so many, like you said, I mean, 20, 25 songs, I think, that many people will know and love, that's you know, they made such an impact at the time, and those songs have never really gone away.
And of course, with the film and the musical Mamma Mia, that allowed a much younger audience to know and love their songs. So there are people of all different ages that love the music of ABBA.
Exactly. They become one of those bands that new generations constantly discover, and maybe people who were around back in the day and didn't think much of them then have come to realize, well, you know, actually these songs are really, really good, and they make me feel very happy. So it's all this going on at the same time.
I remember I worked in a 70s bar in Newcastle in the north of England many, many moons ago, and the song that was requested most, more than any other song by a long way, was Dancing Queen. And I think we played it probably about 5 times a night, because it was groups of people, whether it was people in their 20s or people in their 70s, everyone wanted to hear Dancing Queen.
Yeah, I mean, it's become their, shall we say, anthem or something like that. It's just one of those songs that make people feel really happy and uplifted. And it's just, I mean, I've heard that song I don't know how many times because of my profession and because I've chosen to listen to it, and I'm still not tired of it. And it's something with, you know, with that piano roll at the start, and it's just so, I don't know what the word is really I'm looking for, but it just draws you in immediately.
Definitely. So the fact that you've written quite a few books about ABBA, about the groups, both as a group and as individuals, is it difficult to find new information and new things to share about them that you hadn't known before or hadn't written about before?
It is and it isn't. It depends. I mean, some of the stuff, of course, I have to write over again, because it's the nature of the story. I have to tell the story. But I'm still out there looking for new details, new facts, new stories that we haven't heard. And I do keep turning them up. Every year I learn new stuff about ABBA. Some of it not so important maybe, and some of it really interesting. So taken all together, there's always something new to discover.
Yeah, I was reading today on a music website that ABBA's iconic and record-breaking album Gold, Greatest Hits, has just turned 30 years old.
Yeah, it's incredible, you know, where did all the time go?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Yeah, it is 30 years ago now, and it's sold more than 32 million copies, which is just mind-boggling, you know.
Yeah.
How is it possible to sell that many albums?
Yes, exactly. So looking at them as people, as individuals, I know a lot of people will be aware of the kind of issues that they had in their private lives. I think a lot of the success took its toll, I guess, on them as people.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting with ABBA because they came together, two couples in love. That's how ABBA came to be, because they were all four of them involved in music, and then they happened to be two romantic couples as well. And it just came naturally to them to try to record together. And then their private lives maybe got tangled up in ABBA. So it became difficult maybe for them to tell where does our relationship end and where does ABBA start. And, you know, at some point they just drifted apart as people, but they, you know, they claimed this would have happened, those divorces would have happened even if they hadn't been members of ABBA.
Yeah.
Because it was just a matter of developing in different direction and wanting other things from life.
Mm. And what was the kind of timeline in terms of them splitting up relationship-wise or marriage-wise and the band kind of stopping recording?
Björn and Agnetha, they decided to go their separate ways in 1978. And then 2.5 years later, in early 1981... Frida and Benny announced their divorce, and the band stopped recording in 1982. So there is a correlation there, of course. But at the same time, they did continue with the band, even though they decided to split up as romantic couples. But it also depends on who you ask, you know. But I think for Björn and Benny, it was just business as usual. They write songs and they record them, and the girls sing them, and, you know, everything's fine. Whereas for the ladies, I think it became a bit more difficult because, okay, this is not the same as it used to be. You know, we still do good music, but maybe the feeling for it has changed, and it's not so much fun anymore. And then, you know, they stopped recording. They took a break, as they said, because they didn't know if they were going to get back together again, and eventually turned out they didn't until 40 years later.
Yeah, I mean, it really was incredible last year, them getting back together and producing a new album, doing a tour featuring their digital avatars. I mean, it was a massive, massive thing. And I think most people, if they were honest with themselves, the idea of getting back together to do a professional job, but something like this, having split up with that person for like 40 odd years ago, is quite a big thing. I mean, kudos to them.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right. It is incredible that they managed to sort of remain friends. Of course, immediately after the divorces, maybe they weren't feeling so good about each other, and they had some emotions to work through. But, you know, Björn and Agnetha, they have children together, and they have grandchildren together, and they've had the Christmas, celebrated Christmas together as one big family. So, and Benny and Frida, I'm sure, also sort of found a way to be friendly with each other quite soon. So it's just, they were able to be, you know, mature about it. But as you say, not everyone would have been able to to sort of work through it like they did. It is impressive, I have to say.
Yeah. So what's next for them? Was the album Voyage that they released last year, was that kind of mentioned that was definitely the last thing, or could we see more from them, do you think?
Yeah, Bjorn and Benny, I think, both have said that this is now, you know, we never really said that we were never coming back before, but now we can tell you this is the end, we're not going to do anything else. However, they had more or less said that, you know, during those 40 intervening years, that, oh, there's no reason for us to come back together. We want to work with new things. We don't want to go back to the past, et cetera, et cetera. So who knows if they're going to surprise us with some more music. I'm not ruling out anything when it comes to ABBA anymore.
And what are some of the interesting anecdotes or bits of information that you've picked up on your research over the years that maybe people might not know about ABBA?
Oh, well, you put me on the spot there. There are so many things. it's hard to pick anything in particular. I would say in general terms, you know, that ABBA is not the kind of group where like the regular rock group story with people, you know, they start out as unknowns and then they become famous and then they behave badly on private jets and they, you know, and there's drugs and blah, blah, blah. ABBA, they were really only interested in one thing, and that was being in the studio recording music. That said, of course, there is, if you become as big as ABBA were, there is a lot of drama there as well. There are all kinds of, you know, like the interpersonal relationships for one thing, and how they managed to get through that, because it wasn't always smooth sailing, even when they were married and, you know, supposedly happy married. They had some ups and downs during that time as well, as you do. And there were all sorts of business problems, and they had a special relationship to their manager. So ABBA, they have a dramatic and fascinating story as well. It's just that it's different from your regular rock group. And that's maybe what I've taken with me from doing all this research over the years.
Yeah. And in terms of the setup with the group, were there roles quite defined over the years? Was it clear as to who was responsible for doing what, and were they all kind of happy with their roles?
I think so. I actually think so. They were quite pragmatic, you know. They were four pragmatic Swedes who sort of, oh, so you're the best pianist, so then you should play the piano. And, oh, the ladies sing much better than us guys do, then it's better that they do most of the singing, and so on. So I think everyone felt comfortable and happy in their roles. What is interesting and what's worth remembering is that the two ladies, they had a lot of input, even though they didn't write the songs and weren't sort of the masterminds behind ABBA. They had a lot of input in how they should sing the songs, and they had ideas for backing vocals, or maybe, you know, what happens if I sing this word here a bit like this? Wouldn't that be much better? And they, oh, yeah, do that. So there was a collaboration. They were a real group. It wasn't just two producers and two puppets in front. It was equal in that sense.
Mm. Interesting. And you said you interviewed them right back at the beginning. Have you interviewed them since?
Not the ladies. I've interviewed Bjorn and Benny a number of times over the years for different projects.
And what are they like? What was it like to meet them and be in their presence?
They are quite easy to deal with. Once they've sort of agreed, okay, we're going to do this, we I've agreed to do this interview, then I'm going to give you my best during that interview. So you don't get someone who's 45 minutes late or anything like that. They're very professional and very nice and very easy to deal with. I think they might, I mean, you can't be unaffected by being famous for 50, 60 years or something like Bjorn and Benny have been, because they had a career before ABBA, and not be affected by that in some way. But having said that, though, I think they must be some of the most down-to-earth superstars you'd ever be likely to meet.
Mm. It must be difficult for them. Did they express what life is like trying to have a kind of normal life, you know, how they feel about just walking along the street, going to the supermarket, that kind of thing? Do they constantly get bombarded by fans, or are they able to have some kind of anonymity in various places?
I think one of the reasons why they stayed in Sweden, you know, except for the fact that they're Swedish and they love living here, is that Swedes don't bug them in the same way that, you know, people would do in other countries. We're kind of low key here. Of course, they get recognized. Of course, some will ask them for a selfie or an autograph from time to time, but they don't. You know, oh, that's him. That's Bjorn from ABBA walking there. Did you see? Yeah, it's him. And then it's over. They don't get surrounded by people or, you know, any nasty situations like that. So I think they find it quite easy to be these famous people, at least as long as they're in Sweden.
Yes, oh, that's good. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's called ABBA at 50. It's by Carl Magnus Palm, whom we've been chatting with. The book is available on our website, tre.radio. Carl, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
It's great to chat with you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.